Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.
Welcome to the sidelines. I'm Matt Dolph. I'm back with Ty Anderson. It feels like we haven't done the podcast in like a month, but I think we did last Wednesday. I think it was 7 days ago. But, you know, you try to cover four teams and football season starts. Patriots just played at night. Tends to wreak havoc on your life. And, yeah, I am sleep deprived, but I am cranky. So I'm just fair warning. But yeah. Ty, you tell me your building is going through some turmoil right now.
I mean, sounds like it. I have no idea. Every day sounds like a new hell, a new portal to hell has been opened.
Right outside your door or like upstairs?
Just surrounding me.
They're all just trying to break in from like the ceiling.
Yeah, it's like I Am Legend at this point, and you're just like, I can fix this. But everyone's going to break down the wall entirely.
Yeah, what if all of a sudden, like, someone fell through the ceiling, and he's like, oh God, I got to get out of here. He just runs away, no explanation. You never find out what happened.
I run away yelling, please rate and review the podcast.
Yes, please rate and review. 5 stars only, of course. Thanks to Hardy Forrester and Joey Hurley, who left very nice reviews. Positive reviews only, please. Someone hit us with a 4-star. I thought that was interesting. Not that I, like, care that much, but, like, I figured it was all fives and ones when people rate podcasts. The four is interesting because the four is just like, oh, you know, I didn't really totally agree with this take, so I got to dock you a star for that, you know?
I wonder if it's the fact that we're still doing it this way, not how we started it, you know, when we were actually in the same room. The quality and whatnot. Yeah. Maybe that's a factor.
We probably deserve to lose a star for sound quality. We've been doing it via Zoom for months.
Yeah.
And we'll get back in the studio at some point, but we're still enforcing like distancing at the actual studio. So they're using it. They're using like the headline guys in the side studio there all day. So we don't really, unless we wanted to go in there at like 1 a.m.
Yeah. I don't foresee us.
Yeah. But that's your natural habitat. I mean, maybe we could, that might be fun if we tried it one time.
I know. I'm a big fan of the sun not being out. I don't care for it very much. So.
Yeah, no, I'm thrilled. Yeah, it's 7 o'clock and it's completely dark now. That's where it is. And in a couple of weeks or whenever we turn the clocks back, it's going to be back to hell. So looking forward to that. We got one more. It feels like summer's making a late rally here. It's almost 80.
As is tradition, the seasons, you have two seasons now. You have winter and you have summer. And by the end of it, whichever one it is doesn't want to go away.
I liked last week, though.
In March.
Yeah. I liked last week, though. It was in the 60s every day. That's nice and comfy. The air's nice and crisp. You know, when the wildfires aren't coming all the way out here.
Good times. It does feel like we haven't done the podcast in a while, so much so that I texted you yesterday and said, do we record today? Because it felt like it had been 3 years since we sat down and talked about things.
And I said, Ty, it's my day off.
And there's been stuff that's happened too. I think maybe that was a reason why, between the Celtics and the Patriots and you know, it felt like a lot of things had happened since we last spoke. And here we are though, now Wednesday, and we are talking about all of those things and more.
Really, it's weird though. But I guess it's normal for 2020. Every week feels like another 10 months adding on to our life. Get us out of this godforsaken year, for Christ's sake. But yeah, I thought that was a fun Patriots game. You're having fun, right?
Yeah, I'm having a ton of fun. I think this was probably what I was talking about when we talked about how I was looking forward to the season. I mean, this is some of the stuff I wanted to see. Obviously, it wasn't perfect, right? A, they lost the game. B, their defense got gashed at times. But I do think that this is the Cam Newton effect. right? This is the having a quarterback who isn't going to stomp his feet and pout because he doesn't have Antonio Brown anymore or because Mohamed Sanu has one ankle. You know, this is what I want to see. I mean, N'Keal Harry is not going to make this kind of jump if it's 12 throwing the ball. It's just he's just not going to. And he alluded to that yesterday a little bit, I thought, when he said it's great to have a quarterback who trusts me. And the full quote was more, you know, friendly, I would say. You know, he said that Tom wanted him to do well. And
yeah, he mentioned Tom, but I don't know. It felt like he was sort of just saying that. I think I think he is favorable toward how Cam Newton is treating him rather than how Tom Brady did.
Absolutely, and he should. He should.
Not that it was personal. It's just I think, you know, Tom just wasn't having it. He had no time for it.
He had no time for anybody. And that was the thing. Last year, you know, you go back, I looked through a ton of the old transcripts and audio clips we had from last year of Tom Brady talking about young receivers versus what Cam said about Harry after week two. And
easiest comparison ever.
It's unbelievable. It's night and day. It's just – It's crazy some of the things that he said last year, he being Brady, and the fact that we were like, you know, some of us, myself included, were like, oh, everything's fine, everything's great, he loves it here. Like, some of those comments were like damning, like, yeah, I can't help anybody, that's on them. And it's like, it's like, really? Like, all right, that's weird.
No, I never thought that Tom was like actually happy, you know, like when everyone was talking about his attitude and all that. It's like I noticed that he didn't have a good attitude. He didn't seem happy. Yeah. My argument was that I don't know that it's going to stop them from winning a Super Bowl because it didn't stop them in 2018. That's but right. Obviously they never had enough on offense to really get rolling. And I still blame the offense and their shortcomings for them coming up short last season, not the defense. People sort of like to do after that game. But this is, that's, I mean, it's sort of what I was saying going into the season. I think it's already starting to come to fruition. Cam Newton's all in. He's on the same page with Bill. He's on the same page with the receivers. He's supporting them. They're all pulling in the same direction. I think you saw it in that game. I think you saw it at the end of that game in particular. It's funny though. They were 4 minutes away. They were down by 12 with 4 minutes left. So like they were very close to just like, I thought, like, you know, packing it in for the night there.
Yeah.
But they didn't give up. They came right back, and they came with one freaking yard of pulling off what I called a pulled out of your ass win, which I called in a column going into week one. And that's another the question I had going into the season is, are they just going to be able to pull these wins out of their keisters like Tom Bill used to do all the time? They almost did. I think they're capable.
No, exactly. And I think you also have to look at the context of the loss and the points they surrendered, right? I mean, Metcalf's touchdown is just a great catch. Moore's touchdown is a great catch. They got beat by Russell Wilson, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, throwing some perfect balls in the perfect spots. And so I think you tip your cap and you say, hey, okay, you know, that's great. It's just nice people to have a moral victory again. I think, and that's what the Patriots had on Sunday.
Yeah,
and I don't care what people say if that's a softer approach than what we're used to. Oh well, expectations have changed a little bit as well. And the fact that they were one play away from beating, I would say, one of the top two or three teams in the NFC was a massive positive for me. Given all the uncertainties about this team, you know, it's difficult for me to sit here and. Because what happens is you have people who look at the Miami win and they go, doesn't really matter. It's Miami. They suck, blah, blah, blah. And the next week, they come up close to against Seattle and it's like, okay, are we still going to harp on the loss now? Or can you take comfort in a loss given the quality of opponent?
People are sort of saying that about the Seattle defense. They're saying, yeah, you know, they're giving up all kinds of passing yards. They had injuries. It's like, well, no, come on. That's a Super Bowl contender. They might be the favorites. I know their defense isn't perfect, but as long as Russell Wilson's playing like that, I mean they're gonna be right at the top of the Super Bowl chase. So
yeah,
and I don't take away from the opponent at all. you're on their turf too. And I mean, like, I know there are concerns about defense coming out of that game, but yeah, I think when you play a quarterback like that, who's playing like that, they're gonna score points on you. They're gonna make plays. And so, like, you just – my what I felt good about coming out of the game is that they now – they seems like they have an offense that could sort of hang with it if they run into an offense like that that's humming and the quarterback's playing out of his mind. So, and, I mean, like, it's easy to get on the secondary. The guy, they didn't have a good game, but, I mean, they're not going to get beat through the air like that every week. Not many quarterbacks can play like that. And especially when they were playing zone because they were afraid of the run game too. So – They dared Russell Wilson to throw all over them, and he did.
Yeah, and I think the way I look at it now is that this team is playing Kansas City in 2 weeks, right? Not saying they're going to beat Kansas City. I still think they'll lose that game. But now you look at it and you say, okay, now you might lose 35-28 versus 40 or versus 35-17, right? So you have a sporting chance. I think that's the way you look at it. And that's honestly what progress. That's all I want. I want to see week to week progress with this team, and you got it. And I think that you can adjust and tweak some things, and you will be the Patriots still. You know, that much is clear to me, is that you are not dying just because your old quarterback left and you had some defensive changes. I think this team is positioned to be what they were last year, which is what we talked about, right? You mentioned that if they are what they were last year, but with this quarterback, and with this sort of improvement, they're going to be okay.
Yeah, I thought my take after the game was that, like, okay, they didn't quite have enough on offense tonight, but they could build it up over the course of the season like we're sort of used to seeing, that we didn't see the last couple of years with Brady, and that maybe they'll build upon each week and they'll get a little bit better every week like they historically did. I mean, offense for sure. And like I just didn't get the takes after the game. Like they need more weapons. They need more help on up. I thought maybe that was going to be the take halfway through the fourth quarter. But then once Cam Newton led them on those drives, and N'Keal Harry's making these clutch catches like in the red zone, almost getting a game winning touchdown. Like maybe that's a touchdown later in the season. Maybe 5 weeks from now they make that same play and N'Keal gets in the end zone. So, like, I feel like they could build on that, and I don't think Tom Brady would be targeting N'Keal Harry 12 times in week two.
And no, so, we talked about Edelman having a sprained AC joint or, you know, a high ankle sprain because he would have been targeted 86 times in the final half of play. And to your point about that is that I think that I like the fact that McDaniels says, I gotta scheme up something better there. And Newton is – pissed after. Newton's not like me and you. He's not happy that they almost won. He's pissed. And I think that's pissed. That's a good sign for the future and what the team can do.
No, they're professional. They're supposed to win. So, I mean, I'm not expecting them to say, well, you know, it's a moral victory. Then I would have been a little bit concerned. It's like, you should be mad that you lost. That was definitely one of Tom Brady's better qualities. He hated losing. He hated playing poorly. And I think we saw that after week one in a Bucks uniform. But yeah, expectations are obviously different. But here's where I play devil's advocate with you. At what point do the expectations get even higher? Because I know that your point is that, like, okay, it's not an absolute slog anymore because they're not just totally expected to go win the Super Bowl and win every single game. So every time they lose and every time they don't win the Super Bowl, it's a huge disappointment. I don't think it would be a huge disappointment if the team as constructed right now didn't win the Super Bowl this year. Mm-hmm. But do you think that might change at some point? What if they get halfway through the season and they're 7-1 and, you know, they're a top five offense, they're racking up the total yards, and Cam Newton's in the MVP conversation, and the defense is playing as well as it needs to be. And it looks like they're humming along like that. And you know, and maybe Kansas City's at 6-2 and they're having a little bit of trouble like they had against LA. Like, I know I'm just dealing in hypotheticals here, but do you think it ever gets back to the point this year where we look at the Patriots and say, okay, actually they should go win the Super Bowl now because they're as good as they've always been, just different quarterback?
Yeah, I think that time, in my opinion, comes in November, right? Week 9 is against Buffalo Bills. And if the Bills are what they have been these first 2 weeks, that is your first high leverage, high stakes sort of game. Because as much as these games are, you know, we look at it and say, wow, good challenge against Seattle. Again, you have Kansas City in 2 weeks. That's a good challenge as well. That first divisional game with your top challenger within your division, I think that is – that if they win that game, it's like, okay, you got something here. You're cooking now. You know, this isn't just a fun story. This is a legitimately good team. And I think that that month as a whole is going to be important for this team because they also have Baltimore and Houston that month. So that's and the Cardinals come to town as well. So you have some good matchups in that month. A lot of good head-to-heads for Cam and for the offense to say that they are legit. And if they, I think those games are going to be the true test. I think they're going to be the legit factor, so to speak. Right? If they go 3-1 there. Now we're talking about this team being more of a Super Bowl threat than just the divisional round. Happy to be here, you know. The changing of the guard. This is part of a multi-year build. This team could still win. True. Yeah,
yeah, that would definitely be the narrative if they go into Kansas City and beat them. All right, so I'm looking at the schedule. So yeah, Bills are in Week 7. It was the first time they play the Bills, but they do play the Chiefs, like we just said, and the 49ers before that. So they beat the Raiders and the Broncos, but they lose to Kansas City. I guess say they beat the 49ers since they're at home. And they're 4-2 going into that first Bills game, and it's in Buffalo. So, yeah, if they go into Buffalo and they go to 5-2, then I think the narrative could change a little bit. But especially if Josh Allen's playing the way he is. Did we talk about that last week? Was it you and me?
It might have been
me and Barth, or maybe we both did. How fun to watch Josh Allen is, and that was before he started throwing for 400 yards and throwing 50 yards down the field to Stephon Diggs. And so these games could be, they could be like what we saw the other night in Seattle with the way that both Cam Newton and Josh Allen are playing right now.
So yeah, it's pretty fun. It's pretty interesting to watch Josh Allen, because we talked about this last week. Is you never know what you're going to get. You really don't. I mean, he could pull off the craziest pass you've ever seen, or he could throw it to the team almost to like a Waterboy-esque in overtime. Like, there you are, throwing him the ball. Like, almost like to that level.
He's still fumbling, right?
Oh, yeah. That team is interesting, but that is your top competition in the AFC, so you'll have to see how that shakes out for them.
Yeah, I mean, Cam Newton looks like he's locked in based on how he played at the end of that Seattle game. What I noticed, I'm just glad that they showed that they could pass it like that. And, I mean, I think if like, you could get maybe the rookie tight end Devin Asiasi into the mix eventually. I mean, I don't know, outside of maybe upgrading the spot where Damir Bird's playing, and he had a pretty solid game the other night. But, if you want to add a more dynamic player to that spot, I don't know where – they like truly need this like major upgrade, especially if N'Keal Harry keeps getting better. I mean, I know, I guess maybe you're sort of banking on that, but I mean, I might feel more comfortable banking on that than making another Mohamed Sanu type trade. Bill might be on my side with that one.
Yeah, I mean, if you could get Allen Robinson, I'd love it, but I don't think you can. You know, if you could get a Golden Tate, for example, if he's out there, then yeah, I'd love it. I just don't know how realistic that is. I would like another wide receiver to sort of not put so much pressure on Damir Bird to be what did he finish with? 7 of 10?
Yeah, he played well, but he's not particularly like explosive, or he's gonna like, you know, make plays on his own type of guy. He needs to get open, be in the right spot, and that's pretty much it. There's not much more to him.
I mean, he finishes with 6 catches for 72 yards. I mean, it's nice, but again, is it sustainable? You know, that's sort of the question that you're going to have with him.
Yeah, like, he's the only way he makes a big play, really, I think, is if he just runs straight down the field and hits him in stride, because he has the speed, but he's not like – he's not one of these guys that's going to run all around the field and run like crisp routes and crap like that. He needs to basically run straight down the field, and hopefully he's open for a comeback, or which he did a bunch of times in this game and things like that. But
well, how would you feel about in this one?
He reminded me of Brandon LaFell, though, which is a good thing. When Brandon LaFell was here, he was pretty good. He was a good outside guy.
I would say, what about Zach Ertz? If the Eagles continue to just suck ass, and he has a contract issue going on right now, what about Zach Ertz? Would that make sense? Is that someone you look at and say, that's a guy that you'd go all in for?
Probably, yeah, they might have to trade a first-round pick for him.
Yeah.
for someone that good. I would love that. Yeah, that would be awesome. I put him. I had him in a column once, where I said, like, all right, let's, if we're gonna think outside the box and think big, how about we try to trade for Zach Ertz? And he's making a good amount of money. I mean, not that they can't afford it, but I think he's already making, like, you know, as far as total seeds, like $12 million or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, he's probably gonna be due a contract that pays him even more than that per season. So I don't think he's getting that here.
Yeah,
but he would be a huge addition, because what you'd notice with Cam right away, and excuse me because I'm not a Cam Newton expert. There's probably people who have known this for his whole career, that he's way sharper throwing it over the middle of the field than outside the numbers. So I think if they added a dynamic tight end, or if Devin Asiasi just popped, or if they got someone like Zach Ertz, or just another slot guy, I think if they could bolster their attack over the middle, that would be a huge development for him. That's what I would like to say. I like the Zach Ertz idea. You got me. Now you got my brain churned. I might have to get out my pen and paper, start filling these loose leaf sheets with some scribbles.
Well, that's the thing, though. I just look at this, and I think week two is encouraging, but it also makes me go, okay, can you add to this? How realistic is it to add to this? You know, like, again, given, you know, the sort of the COVID restrictions and the wackiness of this year as a whole, can you add a guy to the roster and have it be worth it? You know, I do wonder if, which side of the coin does that fall on? Is it easier now because of the lack of a preseason, the lack of training camp, or is it harder now because of just the lack of week-to-week continuity, you know, based on testing and distancing policies and all that other stuff that we don't have a full grasp of because we're not in that locker room. So I'm curious if how trading will work out this year, and if it's easier or harder to add guys, because I do think that if this team could add somebody, they could be right up there. You know, I think that they're in that, they're the top of tier two, that yeah. Second tier, you know, I think tier one in the AFC is Baltimore and Kansas City, but I think they are, the Patriots are absolutely the number three team. And they're the head of the second tier of contenders in the AFC.
I think they have to be. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand putting the Bills ahead of them, especially now that these two games, the way Cam Newton's playing. That's what people are doing all offseason.
Oh, yeah.
Crowning their asses.
That always happens. Buffalo,
I really don't understand. It's like, I get it. They got talent, and it looks like Josh Allen is taking a step forward. I mean, they played – easy competition, but I mean, if he's going to throw for 400 yards and four touchdowns or whatever he had against Miami, he could probably put up some numbers against the Patriots. We'll see. Patriots at home, anyway, when we see him in week seven. But yeah, I don't know. I just need some sleep. These schedules are wreaking havoc.
Oh, yeah.
No, man. But that wasn't even sport last night. I watched this movie, The Lighthouse. Have you heard of this movie?
Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe.
Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it because I have a hard time watching Willem Dafoe movies as much as I like him.
Why?
I just think of Spider-Man.
He's just off-putting. Oh, like, that's why you just think of Norman Osborn or whatever his name is.
He's like back to formula. That scene in Spider-Man where he is all high on Green Goblin juice and he jumps on the thing and just hisses is like one of the funniest scenes in the world.
The Lighthouse is funny. The Lighthouse has its funny moments, but it's definitely about these two guys who just completely lose their mind.
Yeah.
And they get drunk, they hallucinate, and it gets ugly.
And that's called
I thought it was a really good movie, but it had me thinking and like furiously Googling stuff and looking it up and reading about it. And, you know, I was up till like 2 a.m. doing that. And then I woke up, I was like, what am I doing with my life? But, I think I'm better off if I get to watch the occasional movie, because if I'm just poring over football film all day, every day, I think I might lose my mind as well.
Oh, yeah. There needs to be a separation. There needs to be a balance. Even last night, I skipped the there's a lighter sports schedule, so I actually skipped the Lakers game. I didn't watch the Lakers game. I just watched the highlights later, and I needed a break from sports tonight. Wednesday we have the Stanley Cup game 3, and we have Celtics game. So you need to sort of pace yourself. You can't just be sports. You need that other outlet, or you're going to lose your mind. You're going to end up like Lighthouse guys if you don't mix in a movie every now and then.
Yeah, I wish you'd seen the movie so I could make a reference to it, but there's all kinds of crazy behavior going on in that movie.
How did you see it? Is it on a streaming service or is it?
No, I use this app called Plex.
I've heard of it.
But you could set up your own like server on that. And I have a friend who set up a server and he just uploads all these downloaded movies. So I can just watch a lot of new movies like right after they come out, basically.
Oh, nice.
So,
yeah.
Siphoning money off from the movie industry.
I know of the movie. I've just never seen it. It was one of those movies that, again, I think was only in certain theaters, and it was out just as quick as it arrived, it felt. It was hard to get a hold of.
It's not going to be a hit.
No.
not built for that. It was very – I'm into the filmy films. And it's black and white. The cinematography is amazing. And, you know, actors chewing the scenery. And so I was into it. I'm into that weird stuff, but it is very weird. It's not for everybody. But I feel like you and Melissa might like it. I don't know, it's not a date movie, but it's, you know, something you could relax and watch. And you'll feel all tense and hate everybody by the end of the night.
Do you know that there's a movie, there's a few movies that years ago, I went on a first date with a girl, and she's like, "You want to go to the movies?" I'm like, "Let's go to the movies." She's like, "What do you want to see?" And I'm like, "I don't know." And we saw Django Unchained. She knew nothing about it. The first scene, she goes, "Oh my god!" The first scene we're sitting next to her. And the first scene obviously is he shoots one of the guys right in the head, and I just hear her next to me go, "Oh my god!" And I'm like, "Oh no, this is not a good idea." The weirdest movie I've done for a date movie, and I actually love this movie, is Sorry to Bother You, which I don't know if you saw.
Oh, that came out 1 or 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, with like Keith Stanfield, and I really enjoyed that movie. But if you haven't seen that movie, it is a goddamn weird movie. It is just a weird movie.
Seemed like it.
And it's great, but it's that was a weird one to see within a date context. But it was I don't mind the weird movies. It needs to go somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't watch the movies that are just like 2 hours of just what feels like wandering around, because then I just feel like I've just been in a fog for some reason.
Yeah, it can't be weird like and have no plot. Is that what you're saying? I mean, what was the movie that came out? The Master. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that one, but it had Joaquin Phoenix. It was one of Philip Seymour Hoffman's last movies. And it was this weird, like, religious evangelical guy, and he recruits him into his cult, basically. But, like, the movie eventually just ends, and they're just like, what happened? And then what was that about? It's like a lot happens, but then it feels like nothing happened by the end of it.
Yeah, that's like...
So movies like that are annoying.
One of his last movies, Philip Seymour Hoffman, one of his last movies was called, like, A Most Wanted Man. And I saw it, and it was like a spy kind of thriller. Like he was like on the run. It's 2 hours of just bullshit, and then just ends. And I remember it ended, and I saw it in theaters by myself. And I went, the credits started rolling, and I went, "What the fuck was that?" I was like so angry. Right. I was like, "That made no sense. That was just 2 hours of me being confused." And then I went on like Rotten Tomatoes, and it was like a 92. I'm like, "How are people liking this? Like, this isn't good. This is just confusing."
Well, you got to check the ratio between the critic score and the audience score. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're close to the same number, then it's probably pretty accurate. But if it's like a 92 from the critics and like a 60, 70 from the users, that's your indication that it's like, okay, the critics are just critics have to go change their underwear over how excited they are over this, and it's probably not quite as great as they want it to be. Yeah. That happens. That tends to happen. And there's a lot of movies where it gets killed on Rotten Tomatoes, but then the user rating is way higher, and it's like, oh, these critics just need to stop smelling their own farts. That's what's going on with this one. It's usually a comedy or a horror movie. You know?
I know. I'm trying to think. I thought there was a movie that came out within the past year or so that got killed on Rotten Tomatoes by critics, but everyone was like, "This is actually pretty good." I don't know why people are saying that. It's probably escaping me right now, but. There was a movie like that I saw, and I remember being surprised at how low it was scored on Rotten Tomatoes, because I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was probably Cuties.
Oh, God.
That came out. I haven't seen it, but
No,
it's funny. Like, I feel like everyone's saying it's like, you know, exploitative or whatever. But I think the point of the movie is to be anti-exploitation. I feel like people are missing the point.
It's to highlight how weird it is.
Yeah, but it's probably weird. I mean, it's probably uncomfortable to watch, but that's probably the point of it.
That's like I watched the documentary that they had on Netflix, The Social Dilemma. Which, if you
want to watch this, have you watched it?
Yes, it's very good. It's very good, but it makes you go, it makes you want to throw your phone into the ocean and be like, I don't think I want to own this anymore. This doesn't seem like a good idea.
It's crazy how blatantly stupid people are on social media.
It's pretty amazing.
They let it rot their brain. They're letting it happen.
Yeah, one of the things that they brought up is how it's really doing a lot of harm to younger kids because they, you know, the dopamine of a like is it's a high. It's like a drug, and they chase it. And they also mentioned how, you know, the human brain is not built to handle, you know, 10,000 people being able to say whatever they want at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, the brain is a very old mechanism, right? And it's going against this new technology that is pretty advanced in terms of what it can stimulate you with. And so I think that's something that was kind of eye-opening. It's just how your brain reacts to, you know, simple things, likes, hate comments, you know, the craving to constantly share what's on your mind. It's really fascinating. Yeah.
I chase those dopamine highs too. I did it like this morning. Like that happens.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I'm not like above it. It's just I try to fight it as much as I can. And like I feel like we should all fight it. But there's too many people out there. They're not even fighting it. They're just letting all this crap control what they say and how they react and how they behave. It's scary, man. I see all this behavior, and it's like I used to do all the same stuff. I'm glad that I'm sort of moving away from that. Yep. And I'm trying to use, you know, essential tweets only. That should be my policy. If I'm reporting information, quoting a, you know, a Patriot player in a press conference or something, reporting during a game, that's what I'm trying to stick to.
Yeah, and it's hard.
I'm trying to move away from the whole, like, I have to get my take out and all that stuff.
Yeah, and I think with myself I've embraced the fact that it's a hellscape. Like I look at it now, and
yeah, you embraced the hell. You've been Book of Eli for months now.
But I also just
I am legend.
I just make fun of it now, and I don't care who that upsets or whatever. Like I don't care about takes. I don't care about if you like my takes or not. Like
dance for me.
Literally doesn't matter to me at all. I just don't care anymore. And I think there was somebody I replied to yesterday. I ended up deleting the tweet. So I was just like, don't even give them attention. But like somebody like ranted at me, and I just wrote, please try out for sports radio at somebody else. I do not care about this. Like that's like kind of how I felt. Like I just the anger and like the always screaming. I just have no desire to be a part of that. I just don't care. Like and I think that we all use social media, and I'm guilty of this still too, is like we use social media to like just dunk on other people when it's like, just shut up. Everyone just shut up. Everyone just leave each other alone.
Yeah. I'm sick of the reply dunking.
Yeah. Take time to read the article versus just like trying to like pile up your own likes, you know, that chasing that high, right? Chasing that dopamine. But that is a good documentary. You would like it as someone who is very anti-social media. You would like this. I think
I'm gonna check it out. Yeah, I'm gonna check it out.
It's like an hour and 20 minutes too.
Oh, okay, that's good. I don't like it when a documentary stretches out for too long. They only need to be like 90 minutes. But one thing that it made me laugh, but it also made me kind of sad is when Zendaya won an Emmy for I don't even know what shows she's on. To be honest, like I didn't watch the Emmys, and I'm not.
It's called Euphoria, I think, right?
Oh, Euphoria. I've heard. Yeah, I've heard of it. I think it's like one of those. It's like a teen drama type show.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I've heard of it.
Yeah, I think I tried putting it on once actually, and I realized very quickly that it's not my demo. But Zendaya won an Emmy, and they called it an upset win because she beat like four veteran actresses who were all more high profile and their performances are more famous or whatever. And so they called it an upset win on Twitter. And all these replies of people going, nobody's upset. I'm not upset. Who's upset? And I'm like, oh my God, guys, what is wrong with you? Not only do you not understand basic English, you know, a very basic English phrase of upset win. Not only do you not understand that, you just immediately go for the dopamine high. You're immediately chasing the hate likes with these replies, not even thinking about it. Yeah. It's like there are people that read that headline and thought that there was literally just a sentence of someone saying upset win because they were upset that someone won a thing.
Yeah. That sounds
like
right.
it's like the Seahawks stopped the Patriots on that last game, and I just tweet upset win. It's like, what are you saying? I am upset that the Seahawks won. It's right there. Why do I need to say all those other words? All I have to say is upset win, and that's all that means.
Yeah, that's
what is happening to the English language in our brains.
That's the thing, is that people, we don't read things. We don't read what we want.
We don't. We know things.
Like, nobody actually reads what it says. They read what they want to see, what they want to say, what they think will get the most pop, which is his own problem, I think. And it's interesting, though. Like I said, this documentary will really sort of shed light on some things that you are definitely thinking about, that yeah. You're like, holy shit, that's real. You know, or that's that, wow, okay, that's actually how that is.
Upset. Angry, you know, game bad. That's all I'm going to tweet from now on. I think that's how you speak the language.
You know, it's a good thing, that a good documentary you'd like is the. It's called High Score. It's about video games. Check that one out. That one's pretty good.
I saw that when I was searching for stuff to watch. I think I am going to put that on eventually.
Yeah, I've watched the first three or four episodes so far. It's pretty good. I'm going to start that Challenger documentary as well, only because we
fun.
Well,
sorry.
we didn't really experience that one, right? Like that's sort
yeah,
of
not
like,
really. We
like
weren't alive.
Generation.
Yeah, we weren't alive when that happened, so I wouldn't say we experienced it.
But we experienced one though. There was one.
The Columbia, I think it was called space station.
It was around early February or something, like 17, 18 years ago, I feel. It was like 2002, 2003.
I think it was called Columbia. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but that Challenger one is sort of like our parents would always say they know where they were when this happened. You know, like that was
one of those days.
Yeah, and I know little to nothing about it. So that's something I actually want to learn about.
Yeah, we do have days. I mean, there's obviously 9/11. Remember where we were on that day. I feel like I'm going to remember where we were when we found out the NBA was shutting down and all that. Then the coronavirus shut everything down.
Yeah.
I remember a lot from this year.
I was sitting where I am right now, where I have been sitting for the last 6 months. So that's great. That's awesome.
I mean, when Kobe died, maybe that's something that we'll remember as sports fans.
That one actually floored me. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe what had happened. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah,
I think that that death, and Michael Jackson death, I think are the two that have floored this generation the most. You know, of just being like, wait a minute, no, that can't be right.
Yeah, Michael Jackson, I remember.
Yeah,
my roommate literally just burst in the door, didn't even say hello. He's just like, Michael Jackson's dead, and oh my God, and yeah, that was a. I wouldn't say I was sad, but That was surprising.
But it was shocking. It was shocking, yeah. Right? Like I think that's sort of the, you know, that's what qualifies those moments, right? Is that you're just shocked by what happened.
That's a fun documentary. I'll have to put that one on.
Which one? The Michael Jackson one?
Yes.
You're talking about the Neverland one? I've never seen it. Oh, I don't have HBO Go. I haven't seen any of these things. That's like people keep telling me to watch Chernobyl, and I'm like, I can't. They're like, you'd love it. I'm like, what part of this? I can't watch it. I don't have HBO Go. I know no one who has HBO. I cannot watch this show. Stop suggesting it to me. You're pissing me off because I want to watch it.
You just download it illegally. That's all you gotta do. You know,
no,
download a torrent file.
I'm gonna end up like that Family Guy scene where they bust into his house and like, do you have the express written consent of ABC in the National Football League? And he's like, just ABC. And they shoot him. That's gonna be me.
Empty bullets in him.
Yeah, I can't have that happen to me. I got enough working against me.
I mean, that feels like what NFL's been doing with their game footage. Everyone was wondering what the hell happened to the coach's film from week one. Mm-hmm. And so they're like looking at us, they're like, we don't know what the problem is. I'm sorry, we're looking into it. I don't know. And then they're like, fine, I won't tweet it. All right, here's your coach's film. And then they immediately put it out. I don't know. Maybe it was just a technical glitch, but I don't believe anything the NFL says generally.
No, they've kind of burnt that bridge of being able to trust them as being forthright. It doesn't seem like their style.
Yeah.
As we've learned.
Yeah. I think some people think you're not doing a good job as a journalist or a media person unless you're literally questioning everything. I feel like the NFL is one where it's actually justified to just, you know, question everything.
Yeah. That's fair. That's like, I question everything the NHL says because the NHL is just, they're not smart. I question everything, and then I realize, no, that's just the NHL. They're not smart enough to get away with things that they think they can get away with. So yeah. it's like they're almost like Mr. Magoo. It's just like following Mr. Magoo as a league, the NHL. So I'm just like, nah, they actually meant that. That's what they did.
You're just waiting for them to walk off the edge of a building.
Yeah, but like land on their feet somehow, and you're like, wait a minute, what's happening?
Land on a pole, and then just then spring back up to the roof somehow.
Yeah. That's the NHL, baby.
How is the cup final going? I've checked in on it a little bit. It's 1-1. It looked like Tampa was trying to blow that second game. So I don't know if they still have it in them to choke this away, but I don't know. I think they should win the series, right?
Yeah, they should. I mean, it's just a matter of which team's depth players come to lead them to victory the most. I think the Stars need something from Sagan. I mean, he's just been a ghost. He hasn't done anything for multiple rounds now. It's like 2.5 rounds. He's been completely quiet. So that's a problem. But
that's going to suck for the narrative. If they win and Sagan doesn't give him anything, that's going to complicate things.
But you look at their roster, though, when they're successful, it's the Joel Hanleys, the Jamie Oleksiaks, the Kivi Rantas, the Dennis Gurianovs. And then when the Lightning have won, it's been a lot of Blake Coleman, Barclay Goodrow, Yanni Gord, Anthony Cirelli. So it really does feel like it's a battle of the team's depth players. You know, last game, Kucherov has a couple of power play assists, but in the end, it does feel like these games are being determined by whose depth performs better. So I think that's something to watch as the series progresses. You know, which team's third line can win the series, can win the battle. I think that'll make the difference. But I think the games themselves have been pretty entertaining. You know, it's fun watching Hudobin. He does remind me of Tim Thomas, the way he battles in there. And the task that he has here, going up against a high-powered offense, it's similar to Vancouver in 2011. It really is. What thing I'm waiting for is Stamkos. You know, when's he coming back? He was skating the other day.
He's coming back, huh? I didn't even know that.
Yeah. So if that happens now Dallas needs Sagan and Ben to get going and find their footing as a 1-2.
Dallas wins. Who's Conn Smythe? I saw someone make the case for Hudobin, but didn't he just step in like last series?
No, he's been there for the most part. I think he's played in all but like two of their playoff games.
Oh, okay.
I would say, yeah, he'd be up there. Klingberg would be up there for me. And Gurianov would be up there for me as well. I think those would be the big three for Dallas if they were to win. That's off the top of my head, though. I might be wrong. There might be somebody I'm forgetting right now. Pavelski's another guy, too, that would be up for consideration. If Tampa wins, it's Kucherov or it's Vasilevsky. Naturally, goalies tend to get picked. But I would say it's Kuch or it's. I think you can make the case for Andre Palat as well. So definitely some options on both sides. But it's interesting. You look at Dallas's options. It seems like it's more depth players and guys that are stepping up to the moment versus the superstars that you'd think would be in contention for the award.
Yeah, I mean, you do need depth and balance and all those things to win the cup. So I guess that'll be interesting to see who has the more complete team. Yeah. I mean, like you said, if Sagan starts playing like he usually does in the regular season, I feel like they'd have a much better chance. And you have a much stronger case for saying, for the argument, that if, like, oh, well, there's Sagan, he stuck it to the Bruins, but he's not really doing that on his own merit. This point, switching to the Bruins, though, it actually, one of the reasons it feels like it's been forever since we last talked is that this whole Oliver Ekman-Larsson thing went down, like, I think right after we finished our last podcast. Mm-hmm. So I want you to get on the record and tell me how annoyed you are at the Oliver Ekman-Larsson news and how out you are on this player coming to the Bruins.
Yeah, I'm out. I'm out 100%. I unless this is a pure salary dump, on the part of the Coyotes, where you're getting Oliver Ekman-Larsson, you're giving up John Moore and Nick Ritchie and, you know, a bunch of filler. I don't, you know, $8.25 million for the next 7 years for a guy who his only, in my opinion, his only boost over Torrey Krug is the fact that he's 5 inches taller. I don't think he's all that great as a shutdown defenseman. I don't think he's a great offensive defenseman. I think that his best days have passed him by. And there is something to be said for the fact that Arizona is where offensive hockey goes to die. But I just don't think that I don't look at him and say, yep, I want to invest for the next 7 years at $8.25 million. I don't look at him as that kind of player for this team, for any team for that matter. So I'm out on that. If you're not going to pay Torrey Krug $7 million for the next 7 years, do not pay Oliver Ekman-Larsson $8.25 for the next seven. I don't think there's that much of a difference when it comes to their production, their skill set, and everything in between. So
he used to be an offensive defenseman, right? Wasn't that his calling card? Which is why I would be out on it, because it's like, I want a defenseman with size, but I want a guy who's going to use his size, not a guy who just skates around and shoots like Ekman-Larsson. He's not that anymore, really. He just doesn't do enough of either thing to be worth that money. What if they got half the salary? What if they go to Arizona to pay some of his salary?
That'd be great.
Wouldn't Arizona have to do that to trade that contract?
Yes and no. Their ownership situation is weird. Like, they owe a lot of money. So the fact that this could
their GM's like 12.
Yeah. The fact that this could be a salary dump does help the Bruins, but it also doesn't, because the Bruins got rid of their bad contract, right? They got rid of the Backus contract.
So annoying if they make this deal and they took on like the whole contract. Like, after all that,
yeah,
now you're just gonna sell yourselves at this thing.
So it's that part of it is it's strange, right? Like for me, I look at it like, okay, if you're looking at prototypes, right, of what you want for the next defenseman you bring in, I want less Oliver Ekman-Larsson and more Jacob Slavin. You know what I mean? Like, I want the guy who can do a little bit of everything, but they need to find that next bargain contract, right? That next bargain defenseman who is on a team-friendly deal or can be signed to one, who will be here and play, again, both ends at a respectable level for the next 5 to 6 years. Because I'm just really reluctant to give Ekman-Larsson, you know, absorb that contract when – you have to re-sign McAvoy soon. You have to re-sign Carlo. The Coyle contract kicks in next season. Before you know it, you're going to spend a lot of – you're either already spending a lot of money or you're about to spend a lot of money. And I don't think you can fit that guy in at 8.25. I just don't see how you do it. So that's why I'm out. I'm out on that. You need to find a good contract. You need to make a real hockey trade to bring that kind of contract in. A name that intrigues me, a name that I think makes sense, is Brett Pesce with the Carolina Hurricanes. The Hurricanes are looking at Jake DeBrusk. They like him. They've liked him for a while now. If you could make a trade there, does it make sense to do DeBrusk for Pesce? You know, it might be a hard price to swallow for the Bruins, but Pesce is used to play hockey at UNH. They love their college hockey guys.
New England.
Yeah, and so I look at that and say that could be a trade that I think would almost make sense. I look at it and say I would love Slavin or Teravainen but I don't think you're going to get that for Jake DeBrusk, you know? So that's the problem. If you do end up trading Jake DeBrusk, but
I'd be okay giving up more than DeBrusk. Mm-hmm. DeBrusk plus a couple other pieces if it means they could get Slavin or Teravainen, you know?
Yeah. I just think that those guys are just untouchables for Carolina, you know, based on what they've done. So, it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to watch, right? We talked about this, that brutally honest offseason. What does that brutally honest offseason mean? You know, does it mean that they say, you know, okay, we're a little too old in the tooth here now, so let's not, you know, let's not go to the cap. Let's make some actual hockey trade. Let's make some tough calls on guys. Because my frustration, and I think this is legit, is that they've been so afraid of making trades involving younger players because of Riley Smith and Tyler Seguin and Blake Wheeler to a lesser degree, that they keep these guys until their value is just completely, you know, sunk to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. I've said this before. It's like, I think they made the right call to hit the pause button on moves like that with Pasternak. And that's obviously worked out. He finished fourth in the Hart trophy voting this year. He's going to be a 100-point, 50-goal guy going forward. So, I mean, they made the right choice to hold on to him. But now they're holding on to everybody too much. And, I mean, it sort of reminds me of back when Theo Epstein was the Red Sox GM and he refused to trade all their prospects. They had all these great pitching prospects. And the only ones that did anything were John Lester and Clay Buchholz. And so, like, now it's sort of the same thing with the Bruins. We're like, Pasternak's popping. McAvoy looks like he's going to be a number one defenseman. And beyond that, I mean, I'm not sure what they have. Carlo, I know what they have. He's a solid second pairing top four defenseman.
Yeah. Will the offense ever be there? You know, yeah.
For Carlo? Yeah. You're just saying in general. I don't think the offense will ever be there for Carlo. The skating's fine. You know, maybe he'll rack up some assists, just pushing the puck up ice a little bit. But he's never going to be. He'll always just be a shutdown guy more than anything, and one that's frustratingly unphysical for a guy his size. I think maybe he figures that out eventually, because he is still young. But I mean, but like, just not to go on a tangent, my point is that like they don't really know what they have beyond like Pasternak, Carlo, and McAvoy, as far as their younger players. I mean, what is Jake DeBrusk? Like, that's why I wouldn't be upset if they traded him. And even if he eventually put it all together in 3 or 4 years, it's like, I don't know if you really have that kind of time. If they want to get one more cup with Bergeron or Krejci, or, I mean, Tuukka Rask, if he comes back, Marchand, if you want those guys to win a cup, that you gotta make a tough decision and get rid of a young player who might eventually figure things out, like Blake Wheeler did, for instance.
Which I do that trade every day. I still do that trade every day because it made the most sense at that time. My issue with the Bruins is that I think that you look at Jake DeBrusk and you look at Anders Bjork, it's kind of like, okay, to your point, what is the ceiling? When are you going to find the ceiling? And does it match up with your own timeline? And one thing that frustrated me reading about the DeBrusk situation was this sort of this, I don't know if you read this, and this was in The Athletic. Fluto Shinzawa had this where he said that DeBrusk slid the entry level deal. So he did a 4-year entry level deal versus the typical 3 that he deserves to get paid and that he will get paid. And I disagree with that, because you get paid if you perform well. If you are an inconsistent hot and cold scorer, you don't get paid. That's just how I look at that. So if that's how his camp is viewing this, I think he will get traded, because they're not gonna give him $5.5 million a year because of what he's done these last 3 years, because he stuck out in Providence for an extra year. No, they're not gonna do that. They shouldn't do that.
That doesn't make any sense to me. He's not producing.
Yeah. So if that happens, I wouldn't be surprised if he is traded. But I hope that his camp, for his sake, because I do think that he can be valuable. I just hope that his camp isn't entering those negotiations saying, we gave you a 4-year entry level deal, so you got to pay us now, you know, because there is part of that's on the, that is on the player to perform and to earn that money. And I don't think that DeBrusk earned that money this year in either the regular season or in the postseason restart as well.
Yeah. I think DeBrusk ceiling, and maybe Bjork too, I don't think they'll ever reach a Pasternak type of ceiling. I think maybe they could get to be like a 60-point guy between 60 and 70 points to go with, you know, solid two-way forechecking type of game with good skating. I mean, it could be solid. Maybe a second line winger long term, but they're not that right now. He hasn't produced like it anyway. Yeah, so that's why I would rather see them trade him for a more established player at this point.
Yeah, DeBrusk has the potential to be a 30-30 guy. I just think that the problem with him is just, you know, we've talked about this before, he relies on bounces too many times. You know, if he doesn't get the bounce, he has a bad game. You know, you kind of have to make your own bounces at a certain point. You've been around long enough. He is entering that sweet spot in terms of NHL experience. So this is where we're going to find out what he truly is. But the problem, though, is that if you pay him and you give him that run and he doesn't progress and take that next step, now you're kind of stuck with him. You know, now that's another contract that's on your books that, well, you better hope he figures it out or you adjust your expectations. I mean, he was the 14th overall pick from his draft class, a loaded draft class. So that'd be a problem if he doesn't get any better than what he has been. And it wouldn't work for the Bruins if that is the case. So they are approaching that, again, that brutally honest time. That involves him. That involves his ceiling and what he's going to be for this team.
When Cam said the brutally honest thing, I still sort of take that as a statement on the veterans to an extent too. Because if he's thinking maybe we should move on from, say, David Krejci, or maybe we should say good luck is at A&O. If you want to keep playing, it's going to have to be somewhere else, or even Tuca. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that's where it can get, that's where it gets brutally honest, I think. Where it says, like, these guys aren't going to be part of the future and we might need to go in a different direction. So, I mean,
I think
is it possible that any of those guys could be gone or traded or anything?
It would surprise me. It would surprise me a lot if Krejci's traded or if Tuca's traded. It just reading between the lines, it does seem like Tuca actually did have the support of the organization when he left to attend to his family issues. I think that's telling. But also, I think that the brutally honest part that is also true, it's taking stock of the guys that you have as part of that next wave. And if they are indeed legit, if they are indeed the next Marchand or the next Bergeron, the next Krejci, you know, that's, and I think that's where a guy like DeBrusk comes into the mix here. A guy like Carlo comes into the mix where they say, okay, they've been pretty good, but are they going to be part of the future that wins the Stanley Cup? Are they truly going to be part of this core, or are they better utilized to help this current core win another championship? And I think that's sort of the other element of that brutally honest offseason, that I think those discussions are being had by the team, trying to sort of look at this and say, where does this guy fit in? Does it make more sense to have him play top six here, or do we trade him and bolster our top four defense, or give Krejci a more consistent threat on his line? I think those are all questions that are being asked right now and on a short off season as well.
One last thing before we get out of here is, did you see the video of Kevin Miller, his agent, Peter Fish or whatever his name is.
Peter Fish, yeah.
He tweeted the video, and I was like, where'd this random dude on Twitter find it? I didn't realize it was his agent.
Yeah.
So obviously that tells me that he's trying to advertise to the whole league that, hey, Kevin Miller's ready to go because he's a free agent. Would you see the Bruins bringing him back? Is it realistic to say, like, maybe all he gets is a PTO wherever he goes at this point?
Yeah, I think if I were the Bruins, I would offer a PTO, or I would offer a one-year deal at or near league minimum to sort of put yourself back on the map. Mm. Keep in mind, he's been off the ice, out of game action for
2 years, basically, right?
Basically, yeah, it's been about 20 months now. And when the season starts, it's going to be about 21 months or 23 months, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So it's been a while. It's been a long journey for him. You don't know if he can play yet. You don't know, because he's had, listen, he's been training. He's been on the ice, and it hasn't progressed to the actual point of playing in games. So while I was happy to see him jumping upstairs and doing all sorts of exercises, the fact remains that he hasn't played in a while, and that we've seen this before. He's had strides and taken steps back. That said, I wouldn't be against bringing him back on a one-year deal. Given the turnover you're probably going to have on defense this year, likely with Torrey Krug leaving, Chara, we're going to see what happens there. Wouldn't be surprised if they trade John Moore just to have some more cap space available.
I think you're wishing that into existence at this point.
But if you do that, though, there's an opening for Kevin Miller. And I do think that he addresses some of the toughness issues that people have brought up in the past. I like the idea of having Kevin Miller in the press box and plugging him in if you're going against a tougher team than, say, signing Wayne Simmons, who's completely cooked, and hoping that he can, you know, be Wayne Simmons from 7 years ago. So I look at it that way as well, that'd be a good low-risk play at preserving or adding some toughness that you used to have back to your team. So I wouldn't be against it, but the price is the biggest thing, and what else they do on defense is the biggest thing. I don't want them to carry 9 defensemen again this year. So it all depends on what the roster complexion is after free agency.
Yeah, I would give him one more shot, see if he can crack the lineup one more time. Because, I think they've missed him in these 2 years that he's been out. I think they've missed having a player like him anyway. So I'd be up for giving him a shot. At least you know what you have if he's fully healthy and invested in playing at the same level he was 2 years ago. And then you at least know what you have there, rather than going down Oliver Ekman Larson Boulevard and trading in your life savings for that. I don't know if I'd be thrilled with a move like that, but I mean, I'm just glad that they are potentially looking into a big move, because I think they, like we've said before, they need to, you know, swing for the fences now. They need to make that one last big, try to put us over the top kind of move, and I just don't know if it's going to be the right one, but, hold your breath.
I'm curious to see what they're going to do, and going back to the Ekman Larson thing, one final nugget that I wanted to bring up is just, if you're going to spend $8.2 million on this team for next year, can you get a 5-on-5 scorer? Can you get somebody who can put the puck in the net and shoot the thing?
Yeah.
You know, that's been a problem now, I would say, 2 postseasons in a row, where your defense has been the problem. Your problem has been the fact that you can't score from the high danger areas, and you can't get in the interior, and you don't produce enough 5-on-5. So I would rather use $8.25 million to add some middle six pop. And this market should have a few of those guys. It's just a matter of what kind of contracts they get, and if you want to be the team that doles them out.
I completely agree with that. If you're going to spend that kind of money, get me a nice 6'2", 205 second line winger who can fire the puck past the goalie when he actually gets to the front of the net or goes down the side on a rush there. Someone who can actually finish the play and actually muscle his way to the front of the net and finish on those chances that he gets from the David Krejcis and the Brad Marchands or Charlie Coyles, whoever he's playing with. Get me one of those guys if you're going to spend that kind of money. That I would enjoy very much.
He's not big, but a guy that I would like to see in Boston, and he's not great defensively, so that's a problem.
Jesus Christ.
Who? But is Mike Hoffman from the Florida Panthers. He's a free agent. Okay. If you go back to 2017, if you remember, he torched you when he's with the Senators. He has a good playoff career.
This isn't the first time you've pumped Mike Hoffman's tires. I wouldn't mind him.
The lights out, and that's what I think this team needs. They need someone who will shoot the puck. And based on what Neely and Sweeney said in their year-end press conferences, they're emphasizing that. They want shooters. They're done with this hold. They want guys that are going to fire it on net. And Hoffman, the last 5 seasons, 242 shots, 224, 257, 253, and 214. So he shoots.
Oh, God, King.
So just let him bring him in and fire
it
on
rip
it. Yeah, exactly.
I would take that. Yeah. But the guy I described is like my ideal, like, utopian vision of the guy they would bring in. But I would be happy if they got Hoffman. So I agree with that. All right. Well, we got to call it. I need to do another podcast, Patriots Media Availability, coming up. So I got to hit the old dusty trail.
All right.
But I'm happy to talk to you again. I'm glad we were able to do this again for another Wednesday podcast fun time. If you made it this far, thanks. I love you. Remember, please rate and review. Positive reviews only. Please. Please be nice to us on social media. Or if you're going to be a dick, just keep it to yourself. Otherwise, I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks. Sports Up Sidelines podcast. We'll talk to you again next week.